Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show, we're going into space with Interstellar, and we're flying around with Big Hero 6. We're going to find new direction in life with Laggies, and we're going to hear an obnoxious author in Listen Up, Philip. But first, we're going to be talking about some news, and I've got a little bit of a rant to go into that one. There's also going to be the trailer park and box office predictions, and of course, the world-famous DVD roundup. Before we get started, I'd like to give a big fat guy's welcome to a new affiliate, WVFT, Freedom 93 in Tallahassee, Florida. It's good to have the show on your station, and welcome aboard the Fat Guy Train. Let's talk about how to get a hold of me. Let's get the paperwork out of the way. If you want to email me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. If you want to reach me on the internet, you can find me at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And on Twitter, you can find me at twitter.com/kevincarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right, Ron Burgundy. We're going to tease you with a little bit of Star Wars news. The big news is Star Wars Part 7, or Episode 7, finally got a name, and it is Star Wars The Force Awakens. They've dropped the Episode 7, and I know everyone was making jokes about they're waiting for the Dark Force Rising or whatever, but, you know, The Force Awakens, that's fine. Everyone complains about every subtitle of movies. Even something like Avengers Age of Ultron, if you know the story, everyone got excited. But if you don't know the stories, you're like, the huh? The Age of who? Back in 1998, I guess it would have been, when they were making Phantom Menace, they released the name was Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. And people are like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Of course, if you actually know the history of serials and how it works, it makes total sense, and it actually also makes sense in the concept of the film. So, The Force Awakens is a new Star Wars movie, and Anthony Daniels, who plays C-3PO, he came out and said that if you think The Empire Strikes Back was the best sequel, that was possibly even better than the first movie, just you wait, because this one's going to be even better. Which would hold water if Anthony Daniels actually liked science fiction movies. He actually never did. I mean, he loves Star Wars because it gave him a career, and he's become very rich off of it. But he never liked Star Wars. I mean, he thought it was dumb. Because when in his 70s, when he was just a British actor, and no one knew who C-3PO was, it wasn't an iconic role then. That's enough of the fun news. The one piece that I really want to rant about now is Lena Dunham. And this is peripherally attached to movies simply because you got to show Girls and she works on that. And although I haven't watched that show, I watched like one or two episodes and I was unimpressed. I didn't hate it. I know there's a lot of people who hate Girls. Not Girls, the actual people, the Girls TV show. I know there's a lot of people who hate that. I don't hate it. I just find it fiercely boring and uninteresting. And I find Lena Dunham fiercely boring and uninteresting. And I don't see what the big deal is with her. I don't hate her based on what she's done. I hate her because she is a horrible sociopathic entitled creep. She's a horrible person. And she is an awful role model for anybody. And she has come out with her memoirs. But first of all, when you're 28, who the heck has business publishing memoirs at 28? I mean, maybe like 200 years ago when people lived to be 35, that would have been one thing. But 28, you're barely paying your own rent at that point. That's just, it's a dumb thing for somebody that young to be. Memoirs are like what you write in your 60s. You know, like the president after he stops being president and goes off and he's retired and he's in his 80s. That's when you write the memoirs. You don't write memoirs when you're 28. Anyways, so she came out in her memoirs and said that she has this passage talking about some of the interaction she had with her sister. And she's been called out by, I believe it was the National Review, saying, hey, this is you basically admitting to molesting your sister. I'm going to be very delicate around this because I know this is the radio, so we can't say exactly what she said. But she talked about like paying her, when her sister was like a toddler. She would like pay her with cookies and cupcakes to get her to kiss her on the mouth for a certain amount of time, and how she would do certain acts to, in the bed while she was sitting right next to her. And she talks about basically really inappropriately touching her sister when she was like 7 and her sister was like 1. And I'm sorry, that's gross. Now, I mean, and in the book, to make it worse, she says, just like a sexual predator would do, I would do this and I would do that. She, in her book, compares herself to a sexual predator. And then when people point out and they say, this is sort of sexual predator behavior, she went on this Twitter rant and like, who hasn't done this? And I've always found that when somebody throws out the who hasn't done XYZ, it's them trying to excuse bad behavior. You see it all the time with people who get caught for drugs and they get busted for smoking pot. And they're like, well, who doesn't smoke pot? I don't smoke pot. I've never smoked pot. I'm not, I see no need to. And there's more than just me sitting out alone in the wilderness who hasn't smoked pot. There's a lot of people who haven't, but the people who feel bad, a little bit of guilt, or they're like, well, who doesn't smoke pot? It's okay, everybody does it. No, everybody doesn't do it. Guys who get caught with hookers do that all the time. Well, who doesn't go to prostitutes? Well, a lot of people don't go to prostitutes. Just because you do does not mean every other person does. Now, I'm not saying that she's like necessary. I mean, she's kind of like the new Woody Allen in the media, but it's not the same as the accusations for Woody Allen, where he was an adult and he knew exactly what he was doing, allegedly. In this one, she was a kid. And I've heard people say, well, she was a kid. She was 7. Yeah, you know what? I've got a 6-year-old. If my 6-year-old did that to a cousin of mine or a niece of mine who's that age, there would be a serious problem. There would be a huge issue among the family. I have a cousin who's 5 years younger than me about the difference between Lena Dunham and her sister. And if I had done that when I was 7 to her, oh my gosh, it would have been awful. I mean, it would have been a huge problem, a huge black mark on the family. The biggest problem with this isn't even that she did it and then talks about it so cavalierly in a book. The problem is that she did it and it's clear she doesn't think she did anything wrong or inappropriate. And that's why I think she's a sociopath. Who hasn't done this? Well, a lot of people haven't. This is not behavior even for a 7-year-old to do to a 1-year-old. That is destructive, awful, horrible behavior. And then she's coming, oh, my sister and I have a great relationship. Oh, yeah, because the victims of sexual abuse never say that they have good relationships with the people who abuse them. No one remembers when they're 1. But that doesn't mean you can do whatever you want to a 1-year-old. You don't know what damage you did to this girl. And she feels no guilt and no remorse. And she's just gross. And the fact that she's okay with it and excusing it and then calling people's names and saying it's a political attack, I'm sorry, Lena Dunham, you are a creep, you are a horrible person, you're a sociopath and a hypocrite. And this is not me going after you because you're a woman or because you're fat. It's me going after you because of inappropriate, awful behavior that you treat other people differently than you want the world to treat you. There's my rant against Lena Dunham. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com or email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies if you want to complain about what I have to say about child molesting behavior at that age. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. There are two movies that kind of made a lot of noise with trailers this week. The first one is Chappie, which is directed by Neil Blomkamp, who did District 9 and Elysium. It's sort of like a more grim version of Short Circuit, it looks like.
I brought you into this world. A machine that can think and feel.
People are always fearful of something they don't understand.
The problem with artificial intelligence is it's way too unpredictable.
I am consciousness. I am alive. I am Jeffy.
This looks interesting. I don't know. I've lost a little bit of faith in Neil Blomkamp after Elysium because I think Elysium was very soft and didn't do what it needed to do. And it wasn't District 9. I mean, District 9 was amazing. This one, Elysium, wasn't. Chappie looks like it's cut from the same cloth and kind of living in that same world and that same existence. It could be good. It could also be really cheesy. So, you know, we'll see what happens. That opens on March 6th. The next movie I want to tease is one I'm really looking forward to. I unabashedly love The Minions from Despicable Me, and I was thrilled to see the fact that they're getting their own movie. So Minions, which opens July 15th.
Minions have been on this planet far longer than we have. They go by many names. Dave, Carl. Oh, that one is Norbert. He's an idiot. They all share the same goal. To serve the most despicable master around. Finding a master was easy. Keeping a master, that's where things got tricky.
These are hard trailers to play on the radio simply because the Minions don't speak any sort of discernible English. And a lot of their humor is slapstick and physical. But still, it looks funny. It looks cute. I to me, this was like when they did the Ice Age movies. I thought the Ice Age characters got kind of boring, but I would have loved to see a Scrat movie. And that's what this is basically. It's a Minions movie, and I'm looking forward to it. All right, I need to go to a break. When I come back, we're going to be talking Big Hero 6 and Listen Up, Philip.
Oh, despicable me.
Kevin Carr here with Fat Guys at the Movies. We are ready to start the holiday movie season. It's the first weekend in November. Technically, yeah, last weekend was the first weekend in November because the first and the second fell on Saturday and Sunday. But this is the first full weekend. This is the first Friday November release. So we are getting the big holiday movies now instead of sort of a mix of horror movies and smaller releases that we had in October. This is kind of a big weekend. This is probably going to be the biggest one until The Hunger Games opens right before Thanksgiving, which is only like a couple weeks away anyway. So you don't have to wait that long, people. Anyways, let's talk about one of the big movies that is opening this weekend. It is Big Hero 6. A boy genius in robotics upgrades his personal healthcare robot into a superhero to help him defeat a masked villain.
You will be all right. There. I would like to help. Scan complete. You are experiencing mood swings. Diagnosis? Puberty.
Whoa, what?
Reports are flooding in about a major catastrophe.
We're under attack from a supervillain, people!
Come on, go!
I am not fast.
Yeah, no kidding!
We gotta catch him.
We can't go against that guy. We're nerds!
Trust me, I know about robotics. We can be way more.
This was one of those movies that was sort of hard to figure out what it was when I first heard about it, because it's this big fluffy marshmallow kind of robot who then kind of becomes a superhero. And part of what I really enjoyed about this movie, though, is the fact that it doesn't fit into a neat little box. I mean, yeah, you can say it's a superhero movie. And I think in terms of sort of family animated superhero movies, it's not at the level of The Incredibles, but it's way up there. It's a good, solid movie. It is a great movie for kids. It has a great message. It deals with some tragedy. It deals with some humor. It deals with some excitement. It deals with real human emotion throughout, and it's not forced on you. I mean, it has a couple cliche moments, but it's a Disney animated movie for a mainstream audience. It's going to have a couple cliches in it. What's neat about this string of movies that Disney has been doing, and I think this goes back to, I mean, it goes all the way back, I think, to like Chicken Little, if you remember that film. Disney's always had the Pixar films. And before, it used to be Pixar was a separate company, and then it was bought by Disney. So Disney has the Pixar movies, but what I like about the fact of how they're handling this, and John Lasseter, who came over from Pixar to head the animation department, he is making sure that Disney is not represented just by Pixar movies. And there's this series of Disney animated films, which include Frozen from last year and Wreck-It Ralph and Chicken Little and Meet the Robinsons. It's basically what the ink and paint department, the cell animation, morphed into once computer-generated movies kind of became the standard. And what's neat about it is they're not all fairy tales. Yeah, I mean, you got Frozen, which is a Hans Christian Andersen story, and it did very well for that, and it was a musical. And yeah, you had Tangled, which is Rapunzel. But Wreck-It Ralph was just something different. And this, I believe, Big Hero 6 is based on a comic book property, but it's not terribly well known, and it's not a typical hero story. I mean, it's the hero's journey, but it's not just a fairy tale that's been brought to life, which they kind of ran through all those in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. They got rid of all the kids' movies that are the fairy tales, and they're not just going to remaking stuff. These are brand new movies that are different, and that's one of the things I respect so much about this arm of Disney animation. And they look gorgeous. I mean, they are now at the level of Pixar animation. The animation is fantastic, and it looks beautiful on the big screen. I did not get a chance to see it in 3D, although it looks like it would be amazing in 3D. It's one of those movies that I think kids can like. I took all three of my kids. And it's pretty rare for all three of my kids to want to see a movie nowadays, because my oldest is 13 years old. So when I asked, do you want to see this movie? If it's a kid's movie or a cartoon, he's like, well, I don't know. And my youngest, who's 6, he's not into going to the theater as much as like my oldest was when he was 6. And I think that's because my youngest, he has a Kindle. and he has a Roku at home. So there's a lot of disposable entertainment for my son. But it's funny, I was having dinner with the three of them, and I said, oh, who wants to see Big Hero 6? And all of them like, I do. And I'm like, oh, gosh. So I'm like, I guess I better take them all three to this movie. And it is gorgeous. It's a beautiful film. And, you know, with no Pixar movie this year, and really, I mean, there have been some good animated films. I mean, you got the Box Trolls, and you had the Lego movie earlier this year. And How to Train Your Dragon 2 wasn't bad, but there was a sort of Disney void. Because you didn't have a Pixar movie, but Big Hero 6, I think, fills it. Big Hero 6 is a fun movie. It's something the whole family can enjoy. I can't recommend this movie enough. It is a fantastic, fantastic film. Stay to the very end. Through the credits, you will not be disappointed. Big Hero 6 totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Listen Up, Philip. A mildly talented but terribly acerbic writer sees his life fall apart around him upon the publication of his second novel.
Is that the new book?
Yeah. Things are going to be pretty crazy for me after the release. Los Angeles in January, San Francisco, and the whole West Coast thing, really. I'm told to expect big things out there.
You sound like you're bragging.
That's because I am bragging. I can't breathe here, and you seem to resent my presence.
Well, you're a cruel, miserable person.
I loved your book. Of course, I had achieved considerably more than you by now.
You'll need a country retreat.
I hope this will be good for us, but especially for me.
This movie feels like it was conceived in the 70s, and they didn't get around to making it until now. It's no surprise to anybody that the publishing world has changed greatly over the last 10 or 15 years because of digital publication. And it's not because you could publish stuff on the computer, because you could publish PDFs 20 years ago. What makes it amazing now is Kindles and e-readers and pad technology, iPads and the like, where you don't need a paper publish anymore. And a lot of people don't. And if you're an emerging writer, I would suggest not to paper publish and not to go to a publisher because it takes forever and you can do it yourself and you don't have to jump through so many hoops that might take you 15 years. But this one is sort of steeped in the New York intellectualism. It feels like a Woody Allen kind of movie. And the thing is, Jason Schwartzman plays this writer who's just a unappealing person. He's just not a nice guy. And he revels in it. He loves the fact that because he wants to be the introverted, surly writer. And if you've known enough writers in your life, God knows I have, there are people that covet this. They want to be the tortured writer. And I've known people that will just act like a jerk just because that's how they think writers should be. And the whole point of this movie is this guy's not super famous. He's notable is probably the best way to say it. I even think they say that at some point in the movie. That I'm notable, I'm not famous. And you know, he's the kind of person that could publish one or two books and just disappear off the face of the earth and nobody cares. The biggest problem with this is the guy ends up getting all these just really attractive women. It feels like a Woody Allen movie because it's that tortured, neurotic personality in New York. And he's got gorgeous women all over him, which is ridiculous because there's no celebrity to being just a coffee shop book writer nowadays. You'd have to be a much better known. You got to have a bigger fan base before you start getting groupies at this level. Because I should have groupies. Where are my groupies? That's what I want. Where are my groupies? Where are the fat guy radio groupies that throw themselves at me? Where are the women throwing their panties and bras at the magical studio in the sky? Inquiring minds want to know. Sorry, I got distracted from talking about Listen Up, Philip. I was too busy thinking about groupies. Anyways, Listen Up, Philip's not bad. If you like that sort of neurotic New York writer story, it's fine. It meanders a bit, especially it seemed like they're trying to figure out what to do and to pad out the last half of the film. But it has some very funny moments, but it's ultimately depressing to watch because he's such a depressing person. Anyways, I'm really on the fence on this one. I'm going to say that it kind of sucks. The only reason I say it kind of sucks is just it's not my cup of tea necessarily. But it does have some good moments.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
That's it. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Interstellar starring Matthew McConaughey and Laggies.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style.
Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr coming right at you. Let's move on to the next film. I'm going to go back to the smaller releases. First, I want to talk about Laggies. A woman on the verge of 30 abandons her life to try and find herself by befriending a high school girl and living with her for a week.
Want to stay for dinner?
Is it make your own pizza night?
Sure, great idea.
Honey, I don't want to see you throw away your education. You have an advanced degree.
I need to lay low for a week.
My dad's running some lame divorcee mixer, so he'll be late.
Dad, you're supposed to knock.
Wow, high school students are looking rougher and rougher these days. Who are you?
It's kind of hard to explain.
Hey, did you hear the one about the grown woman who started hanging out with a bunch of pubescent kids?
No, what?
No, I'd never heard of it before either.
This one stars Keira Knightley as the lead character, and she does a fine job. You can tell she's struggling with the serious acting. She's bounced around in different roles. I mean, she's done the more edgier films like Dangerous Method, David Cronenberg's film. And she's, of course, done serious sort of like, you know, costume dramas like Pride and Prejudice and Atonement. But this one is a pretty straightforward American second coming of age movie. I call it second coming of age because the coming of age movie is like when you're in high school or college. Stand By Me is the quintessential coming of age movie where you go from being a child to heading into manhood. This one's the second coming of age where you've made it to adulthood, but you haven't gotten your crap together yet. And so you kind of have the second coming of age. And we've seen these before. The one I most recently remember was Lola Versus, starring Greta Gerwig, who I think was a much more charming actor. There's a certain coldness to Keira Knightley. She's very, very pretty, and she's very, very cute. But she's not accessible because she is so pretty. And when she smiles and is cute, there's something sort of fake about her. Whereas, like, Greta Gerwig's extremely approachable, and you can get the cojones to ask out somebody like Greta Gerwig. Keira Knightley would scare guys away because she's just too pretty. She struggles with her American accent in this one to the point that she is almost channeling Jane Levy from Suburgatory, where she kind of just talks like this. She's got that sort of surly suburban accent, which just is not terribly becoming of her. It's an okay movie. I mean, it's a person trying to get their life together, and we've seen these movies before, and I struggle with these movies because I did have my life together by the time I was 30. Everybody always has challenges and not knowing what they want to do, and Lord knows I've bounced around on different odd jobs before and changed careers about 7 times in my life. Everybody does that to a degree, but I'm not as whiny about it, I guess. I guess I just sort of man up on something like this a little more than a character like this, and I kind of had my life figured out relatively early. There were maybe some things that I wanted to do differently, but I never felt like my entire life was falling apart. And it's hard for me to connect with a movie like this. The acting's pretty decent. It's somewhat predictable. It's a little bit weird at times because it's one of these things where you don't buy that this could actually work. The story does kind of meander and force itself into corners, but it's an okay movie. I mean, I'm going to say it kind of rocks. Just because I didn't hate it. I'm sure that's going on the poster.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is Interstellar. This one actually opened on Wednesday, Tuesday night, really. If you happen to be close enough to a theater that still projects film, it was opening in 35mm and more famously 70mm on Wednesday to get an early opening before it opened Friday. And we'll talk a little bit more. I'm not going to talk too much about the film aspect of it because I am saving that for later on in the show where I'm going to kind of dissect the film versus digital and kind of what this means from a consumer standpoint. But first, let's talk about Interstellar, the movie. Christopher Nolan directs this space adventure about astronauts sent to another galaxy to find a planet to colonize.
This world's a treasure. It's been telling us to leave for a while now.
Your daughter's generation will be the last to survive on Earth. You're the best pilot we ever had. Get out there and save the world.
Everybody ready to say goodbye to our solar system?
To our galaxy.
Here we go. Want to get down fast, don't we?
Actually, we want to get there in one piece.
We have a listener on the show. His name's Thomas from Seattle, and he has often asked questions regarding what he terms the Nolan effect. So I'm going to sort of steal that from him. Thanks, Thomas. And I can tell Thomas isn't a terribly huge fan of Christopher Nolan. And he's basically said, does Nolan get a pass by a lot of people because he's Christopher Nolan. And that's ultimately what the Nolan effect is. And we see that a lot. Spielberg would get a pass. Kubrick will get a pass. These big name directors who are very well respected get a pass. I don't give a lot of directors passes, even my favorite directors. I love the Coen brothers, but when there's a movie of theirs I just didn't particularly like Burn After Reading or A Serious Man, I'll let you know. I'm not going to lie about it. I think that there's a lot of people giving Nolan a pass on this movie because he's Christopher Nolan and what he's doing for film, which we'll talk about later. I'm not giving him a pass. I'm not saying the movie's bad. The movie, let's just start off here. The movie is a decent film. It's worth seeing, and if you're going to see it, you might as well see it in the theater because it is a big screen movie. And the effects look pretty cool. The effects aren't mind-blowing. There's a lot of space stuff going on. Obviously, they're in space. But I got to say, I've seen far more impressive space shots in other movies. And I mean, you'd be tempted to say, oh, well, that's because they over-digitize and they make it look too cool. Well, have you looked at the Hubble telescopes of nebulas and pictures of nebulas and stuff? There's some amazing stuff. It's not just black space with white stars on it. There's a lot of color and richness in space. And there's some cool shots in Interstellar. There's some, dare I say, breathtaking shots in Interstellar. And when the action's happening, it's really pretty good. The problem is, the characters are terrible. I don't like any of the characters. When the human race is on the brink of extinction and you can't find any characters that you actually root for and you want to have live, that's not a good thing. He's trying to wring emotion where there really isn't any emotion. And it's sort of like he and Jonathan Nolan wrote the script and they go through the motions for the characters, but there's no reality to them. There's no grounding to them. They're just sort of these props that they move around the movie. And it's an incredibly ambitious movie. And it tries to deal with sweeping concepts of thought and emotion and light and gravity and the beginning and the end of the universe. But it reminds me a lot with that ambition. It reminds me a lot of The Dark Knight Rises. The Dark Knight's a fantastic movie. But if you look at it, it's a relatively well-contained movie. It's really just about this guy trying to get rid of this bad guy in Gotham. The Dark Knight Rises was overly ambitious. It was sweeping. It was taking place over the better part of a year, and it was talking about massive political struggles and class systems, and I mean, there was a lot of stuff, and it was a very dense movie, but that doesn't make it a good movie. That doesn't make it a good story, and that's where I really think that, I mean, Dark Knight Rises was worth seeing, but it was a huge step down from The Dark Knight, and that's the way I feel about Interstellar. It's so ambitious, it's so massive, and it tries to tackle so much, and it fails on a lot of it. And I'm not giving him a pass because I'm like, oh, it's overly ambitious. I mean, because I saw this in independent film. When I worked on independent film, you see people have these grand, ambitious ideas that they want to do this because they had Adobe After Effects and they want to do this grand space opera. And then you watch their movie and you're like, well, it still looks crappy. You know, you didn't achieve the ambition you had. Ambition is good to reach for the stars, but Nolan reaches for the stars and doesn't get any. He gets a couple in terms of effects, but then again, effects are effects. You throw $165 million into a movie, you're going to get it to look good. So Nolan does have this grand scope, but his characters are terrible. His science is, there's literally scenes that reminded me of the moment in Transformers Age of Extinction where Stanley Tucci's like, math, algorithms, why can't we have nice things? And we have a speech like that where they're just throwing out concepts. He's like, well, we can't do this because of gravity. And, oh, okay. It really dumbs the science down, and then it goes into lots of cliches, and the characters do stupid things. There's some massive fails in this movie, but it looked really cool. So it's this really epic, ambitious, 2-hour and 45-minute partial failure. It's worth seeing, but it's not 2001. 2001 was ambitious, and it reached it all. There is nothing Kubrick tried in 2001 that he did not achieve in that movie, and there's oodles of stuff that Nolan tries and misses completely. Another thing he did with The Dark Knight Rises is he went to the biggest cliche ever. He literally has a ticking clock on a bomb. Inception, one of the biggest cliches. It was all a dream, or was it? This guy works with cliches and makes them very grand and epic, but they're still cliches, and you see that in this movie as well. Ultimately, I'm going to say that Interstellar kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about Interstellar and the film versus video aspect of it. are wrapping up Fat Guys at the Movies. We're going to talk a little bit more about Interstellar, and we're going to talk about the film aspect. I kind of left a lot of that out of my discussion. I only saw it in digital. I saw it in IMAX, which still looked good. Prometheus looked better. When it comes to sort of grand looking at the universe, I thought Prometheus's space shots were awe-inspiring, and Interstellar were acceptable. Gravity was a much better movie. Last year's Gravity, which was much simpler and more contained, and it was extremely ambitious, but it reached its mark for everything. Let's talk about the film version of it. Here's the thing. Christopher Nolan is obsessed with film, and there are several directors out there who don't want to see film die, and Nolan's one of them. Martin Scorsese's another one. Quentin Tarantino's another one. This is a group of directors have basically vowed that they're always going to shoot on film, and it's keeping Kodak alive because they've made the studios agree to buy enough film. And there's good and bad about the film obsession. It's good because you're preserving a format. And you may say, well, I don't care about presentation, and that's fine. But the reason you really need to have a certain level of film preservation, at least for projection, is there's a lot of film prints that aren't transferred to video yet. And you can say, well, I don't care about film. Well, what about all the movies that are out there that haven't had a video release yet, that haven't been transferred to digital? Those are just going to die if you don't have some sort of preservation for them, or at least a demand for them. They'll just turn into glue, just sitting there in their cans. So it's good to preserve the format. And it offers the highest resolution available. The 70 millimeter. There's a huge difference between watching something in 70 millimeter and even in IMAX. I've seen stuff projected in 4K. I've seen stuff projected in 70 millimeter. 70 millimeter, you really feel like you could crawl into the frame. 70 millimeter looks amazing. There's also some bad things about it. One of the big problems is it's hard to find a place that still projects film. Most places, because of digital and 3D, they've gone to the digital format, which is fine because it makes it easier. I mean, you know, it's a box the size of a shoebox is what you can send a print in instead of this massive container of many, many, many reels of film. And as long as you push the right buttons, it's a push button system. Video is very easy to do. It's very easy to get right. You just make sure it's calibrated properly. And that's up to the people maintaining the projector and maintaining the light and all that. When it comes to film, a million more things can go wrong with it. And the problem is you get a film print, you can get a scratch, and it kind of ruins the experience. I've gone and seen retro prints of movies that the prints warped. And so half the screen's kind of in focus and the other half's a little less in focus. You get digital degradation, but it's a lot easier to preserve and maintain a digital library than it is to preserve and maintain film. I mean, film is, there's hard resources you need to expend to preserve film. This was no more noticeable when Nolan allowed screenings of The Dark Knight Rises. He mandated that any early screenings and test screenings and preview screenings and press screenings had to take place on film. They didn't have to be 70 millimeter, which is good because the closest 70 millimeter presentation format you have, I think, is Chicago. To me, it's a 6-hour drive. I'm not going to drive 6 hours to see a movie. I'm sorry. And so the theater, they showed it and had to pull out their old crappy 35 millimeter projector. They set it up and it looked terrible. It sounded terrible. It was a horrible presentation. And when it comes down to it, I would rather see a great or perfect presentation of a digital print than a substandard projection of 35 millimeter or 70 millimeter for that matter. If you don't have a trained projectionist, of which there are fewer and fewer now because you don't need them for the multiplex, digital is the better way to show it. So that's why it's leaving the mainstream. The promotion and the buzz I'm hearing about Interstellar is more about the format than about the film itself. People almost universally agree. There's massive flaws in this movie, but they're like, but it's 70 millimeter. It's Christopher Nolan. And that's what I mean by giving him a pass. You don't just get a pass because you put it on 70 millimeter. Yes, that's great and all. But it reminds me a little bit of when P.T. Anderson released The Master in 70 millimeter. Well, that was nice and all, but most people were going to see it digitally projected or on video. And I think it's nice to have the giant format available, but you know what? If you want to make IMAX better, don't demand 70 millimeter back in the IMAX theater. Demand higher resolution on your IMAX projectors. Demand 70 millimeter resolution on the IMAX projectors. That's better than trying to get people to continue to run and maintain a 70mm equipment, because ultimately it's going away in the mainstream. And it may not happen this year. It's not going to happen this year. But it's going to be like Final Records. You're going to have a group of collectors that still have them, but it's just, it's not a viable format. It doesn't make economic sense to continue to produce film prints on the large scale, not when you can do the digital versions. And the digital projection is good. I mean, it looks good. And the mainstream doesn't care enough about film versus video to really make it a big deal. People like Martin Scorsese and Quentin Tarantino and Christopher Nolan grew up watching film prints. I grew up watching film prints. I've also gone to movie marathons and festivals, and I've seen stuff projected on film, and it's really cool. And my kids are just old enough to still be seeing some things on film projecting, because I've taken them to some special event screenings and that sort of thing. But we've got a whole generation coming up of people who've never watched anything projected on film. So they're not going to care. And that's your mainstream audience. And you're going to get directors who generally aren't going to have seen much on film. And the film versus video is meaning less and less as we go forward. And that's, yes, I love film, but this is the natural progression of things. This is the horse and carriage versus the car. Yes, you still have horses and carriages running around, but not for any sort of practical use. All right, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. And was I correct? I said $10 million for Nightcrawler. And I was actually pretty close. But Ouija actually jumped up and won. It won by like $300,000. It just barely beat Nightcrawler. I thought it was going to be a horse race between the two. And it was. Nightcrawler made $10.5 million and Ouija made a little closer to $11 million. But it's still... It's $10 million weekend per movie. And then everything, I mean, in the top 10, the 10th highest movie is Dracula Untold. It's been out for 9 weeks and it didn't even make $3 million. That is the softness of last weekend. This weekend is going to be different entirely. It's going to be a huge weekend because you've got two massive movies. You've got Interstellar and Big Hero 6. Everyone's tracking 50 to 60 million for the two. I'm going to say Big Hero 6 is going to make 62 million. And I think it's going to win. And here's why. There's two big reasons. One of them is Interstellar got a release on Wednesday, which was technically Tuesday night. It got a 2.5 day jump start to see this movie. So the high demand, the people who dying to see this movie, saw it already. So like the big fanboys, and so you're going to get a little more casual audience this week. You had 2 days to see it if you were a crazy Nolan fan. And the rest of the audience, I think, is going to be struggling with the fact that it's getting middling reviews. And I think some people are going to see it as boring. I think the word of mouth on this is going to suffer, because I think Nolan fans are going crazy over it, but I think the standard mainstream audience is going to be, well, we've seen some of this before, is going to be the response. And it's also going to be a 3-hour block because you got the movie and trailers in there. So you can show fewer showings of this movie and it's not running unopposed. Now the audience doesn't overlap too much. Big Hero 6, family movie. We haven't had a really good family movie for, we had The Book of Life, which did okay. And we had Alexander the Terrible, No Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. But those are about a month old each. And now we've got Big Hero 6, which is a big Disney movie. There's been struggling to get a big mainstream animated film. And this will do it. So I think it's... And generally, those movies build through the weekend. Because Friday, since it's a family movie, people are going to see it on Friday. But you're going to get big audience on Saturday and Sunday. Where I think some of... Interstellar will have burned off by then. So I actually think that Big Hero 6 is going to win. That's my saying. I'm going against a convention, but I think a lot of people are just hoping Interstellar, because they love Christopher Nolan. They're giving the Nolan effect. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the world-famous DVD Roundup. Whole handful of movies here. There's some that are pretty big, like Maleficent is out. That's a good movie. It has its problems, but it's a neat movie. It's this whole new trend of the movie from a different point of view, the fairy tale from a different point of view, and I think this handles the different fairy tale much better than Snow White and the Huntsman did. Angelina Jolie does a good job. It gets a little weird at points, and I don't like the Sleeping Beauty aspects of it, but I like the Maleficent side of it. Planes, Fire, and Rescue is also out. This was a fun movie. I actually like this better than the first Planes. I took my kid to it. It has a lot of honor for the heroes, the real-life heroes who do smoke jumpers. They're not planes, but real people. And, I mean, the movie, they're planes. But that's a good one to check, and especially if you've got kids. You know, if they're kids, like I got a son, he's 6, and he loves vehicles. So planes and cars and trucks, he's crazy about those. There's also Hercules, which is not very good, but it's out there. The Christmas Candle, if you want to get in the spirit of the holidays early, which is, I talked about it last year. It's not a bad little Christmas movie. I mean, it's a faith-based Hallmarky kind of thing, but it's decent enough. A Most Wanted Man, that's Philip Seymour Hoffman's, one of his last films. And The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug, the extended edition is out. So if you want a longer version of The Middle of the Hobbit, it's there. This is in time for next month with the Battle of the Five Armies. Then some TV. You've got the Matt Smith years for Doctor Who. You've got Sherlock seasons 1-3. And you've also got The Newsroom season 2. Stinker of the Week is Step Up All In, because even this tired franchise is getting tired. My time is up. Next week, we're going to be talking about Beyond the Lights, Dumb and Dumber 2, and Beside Still Waters. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.